listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Hey guys, just a quick note before we get the show started. Audio quality is really important to me. I want you guys to be able to hear the show clearly. And just getting off a bout of strep throat, being sick while traveling is never a fun thing. So you'll hear my voice pop in a little bit out today, and I certainly apologize for that. Wait as long to record as possible before we release the show, so that my voice would be as strong as possible. And our first segment, Mike was on a boat in Europe. So we did our best with the audio quality on that. I think it came out pretty well, but just my two cents that we're definitely doing everything we can to make the podcast sound as good as possible for you. So hopefully my voice will hang in there and you guys will enjoy the show. Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. Our show's all over the board today. We're going to bring Mike on in just a minute. Producer Mike, he's hanging out in Amsterdam today. He's going to check off a couple of firsts for us on the show. And then after Mike and I catch up on some of the American Airlines changes and some new award sales, Jen's going to check in with us from Deals We Like to talk about a change to the Marriott Rewards promo that makes things just a little bit better, not a lot. And then we're going to wrap the show up with an interview that I did on site a few weeks ago at the C.R. Smith Museum. For aviation geeks, this is a place that you've got to make sure you put on your list down in Dallas-Fort Worth. We'll talk a little bit more about that later in the show, but if you're an av geek, you're going to love it. With that, I also want to take a quick moment to ask you to do us two quick favors. If you're listening to the show, if you could just subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on, Apple Podcast or Google Podcast. If you hit the subscribe button there, that means you'll get our episodes for free as soon as they're published every week. And if you could leave us a comment and a rating on the podcast, we'd surely appreciate that. We read all of those comments to help make the show better. And by subscribing and rating the podcast, you're helping us reach more listeners, which we'd love to do. With all that housekeeping aside, Mike, welcome to the show again. How are you?
I'm great. I am a little tired. I left Bansko, Bulgaria at about 2 o'clock this morning, drove 2 hours to Sofia, hopped on a Bulgaria air flight, which is another story for another episode, and landed in Amsterdam, and now I'm on a boat.
Yeah, so Mike is checking off two boxes for us this morning. This is the first time we're recording with somebody remote from Amsterdam, and Mike is also sitting on a boat right now. So this is the first time we are recording a podcast with somebody not quite out to sea yet, but definitely bobbing and weaving a little bit.
Yes, most definitely. I'm standing in my cabin. It's very small, so I'm grateful I opted for the single option, and I'm doing a little back and forth, but I'm kind of going with the motion of the ocean.
So how long are you going to be out in the water?
We are on the boat for 4 days. We're doing a quick sail trip just today. This is kind of shared accommodations for the annual, co-working Europe conference. So, for the rest of the time through Saturday, we'll just be tied up at the dock.
Well, that's a lot less fun than having the conference out in the water for the next 4 days.
Yeah. 500 people. So it'd be a little difficult, I think, to find a boat that big.
I know. All right, so let's get into some of the American Airlines stuff. For starters, congratulations. You just finished your Executive Platinum Challenge, right?
Yes, thank you. Barely, by the hair of my chinny chin chin.
Yeah, with just a couple of days to spare, according to your blog.
I did, yep.
So, as a guy who's been a United guy for quite some time, what was it that made you want to make the jump to American with the challenge?
I kind of came to the conclusion this summer that based on forecasted work travel, there was no way that I was going to be able to hit 12,000 premier qualifying dollars. So I was kind of broken up about the fact that I'd be losing all the perks of 1K status. And there's a couple annual trips I take with my business partner that I like to use some type of global upgrade for. So I decided to do a little research on what a status match challenge is, what goes into it. And I kind of took a gamble and said, okay, let's see if it's worth it. to see if I can hit Executive Platinum on American, not just for the four system-wide upgrades, but also for some of, you know, the added perks of, you know, three bags. You know, a lot of times we're checking equipment with us, so I don't have to ship it. That's great. You know, priority boarding, but also most definitely lounge access and one world status.
Yeah, and as somebody who's based in Chicago, you certainly got the choice between American and United. I was an American Executive Platinum member for a decade, and when they made some changes to the program, as things became more same, if you will, across the different programs, I opted to move to United because that was who was strongest at my home airport. You know, with you having both options at Chicago and plenty of flights for both, you know, how do you feel about the recent changes where, you know, we already knew, having discussed the podcast a couple times here, that United had moved to, you know, higher premier qualifying dollar level, which are the dollars needed to spend to earn elite status every year. They had moved to $15,000 requirement for their top tier 1K status. Now American has matched that at $15,000 for Executive Platinum. Where does that put you for requalifying in 2019?
Well, as I mentioned in the post I did, kind of what threw me for a little bit of a curveball was halfway through this challenge, we've got a project that's going to be launching in the next month or so that's going to be kind of taking my work travel kind of above and beyond where I normally do. You know, typically 180,000 miles, next year will probably be, you know, 220 or more. So with the destinations that we're going, I don't think it will be a problem, but I think I will be kind of squeaking it by at the very end of next year. You know, $15,000 is a ton. It's amazing what that $3,000 difference really kind of adds up to.
Yeah, I think it's going to my personal opinion is I do think it's going to thin the crowd a bit in both airlines, both American and United. I'll be interested to see exactly how much, though. You've also got, you know, what qualifies and what doesn't qualify in terms of fees and other things. So, you know, when you talk about pure spend, you know, boy, I mean, it's going to be tough for some folks to hit that number over the course of a year unless they're really dedicating all their travel to American or United.
Yeah. And it was, you know, I've kind of been documenting this in a couple of different phases of, you know, kind of the reasoning why I would do this, kind of my experience. And, it, you know, it's kind of funny. Loyalty, you know, has its benefits for the consumer, of course, but there's a reason why companies do it. You know, you kind of get ingrained. So whether it was Stockholm syndrome or not, you know, the first couple of flights that I'd flown on American, it had probably been 2.5 years since I had, you know, opted to actually, you know, take an American flight of my own choice. So it was just kind of weird, you know, getting reoriented. You get into a really routine habit, especially when you're in and out of O'Hare, like, you know, every other day or twice, 2 to 3 times a week. So, you know, just kind of getting the kind of figuring out where the best desk is to check in, you know, making sure you don't get caught at the back of the line for TSA pre-check, all the different gates, but also the boarding groups. And to be honest, like I totally had a faux pas. One of the first trips I took was I had my business partner on my reservation and I had no idea that made me ineligible for upgrades. So, you know, it's just kind of those, you know, you kind of have to learn it the hard way type thing.
Yep. No, I agree. And at the same time that things are getting, you know, more painful, if you will, or more cumbersome to qualify for status, in sort of a surprise, American has actually released some web specials for economy awards that that definitely caught me off guard. And what I mean that is, you know, normally when they had these web specials in the past, some of them were tied to having a specific credit card. So there were awards where if you had a Citibank AA card, you'd have a list of discounted cities. And, you know, they bordered on valuable. So sometimes you'd see, you know, Albany to Orlando or Miami pop up, which was, you know, okay, that's valuable. And other times it'd be, you know, say Rochester to somewhere in the Midwest, and you'd say, well, that's not particularly valuable to most people. You know, the first set of web specials that they launched were kind of, you know, meh. And then, you know, Gary of View from the Wing, who's been a guest on the show a handful of times, reported on a new list recently that includes some pretty desirable destinations, including Honolulu, with prices that are almost 50% less than the normal amount of miles that you'd have to redeem, which is a pretty interesting move for American.
Yeah, I mean, I'm shocked. I know I've been a little behind the eight ball on news just because I've been in the mountains and whatnot. But when you take into consideration some of the ways that you can earn miles, you know, when I started doing the challenge for Executive Platinum, I took advantage of the Avis promotion, right? So if I rent an Avis car for 3 days, I get 5,000 miles. So that's awesome. You know, it used to take me probably, four Hertz rentals to get a one-way ticket on a United Award ticket. And now I only have to rent an Avis car one time for 3 days. And I can, you know, get a one-way ticket. That's awesome.
Yeah. And I think, you know, the nice thing here is, you know, like when you talk about, it certainly doesn't help me as an East Coaster, but if you live in LA or Phoenix, you know, what used to cost you or what normally cost you, because I'm sure this isn't a forever thing, would normally cost you, you know, 20 to 22,500 miles one way, now can cost as little as 12,500. And, you know, one of the points that Gary makes there is that the pricing here seems to be variable based on what fares American is charging. And there's a little bit of, is this a move towards revenue-based redemptions and tying them more closely to fares? And, you know, I mean, look, those are all certainly things that we worry about in the miles and points world. But I think the entry-level bullet point for travelers is, hey, right now you can book a trip to Hawaii for maybe half as much as you would normally have been able to book it. And, you know, gosh, especially, you know, from my standpoint of, you know, having a wife and two kids that I want to travel with, multiplying those savings by four means that, you know, I could be looking at saving, you know, 60 to 80,000 miles to fly my family to Hawaii round trip for a vacation.
So does that mean that you and I can now finally check off Hawaii off of our bucket list and use it as an excuse for an in-person Miles to Go recording session?
So the only thing I'll say about that is, and God knows I don't want to sound too spoiled when I say this, but I really do love laying down flat when I'm going to fly 10 hours.
You and me both.
And, you know, it's quicker for me to get to Europe than it is for me to get to Hawaii from the East Coast. So while I love these fare sales, I think I'd probably have to tie them into some sort of a trip to the West Coast first, because I don't think I'd want to do 10 hours of flying in one day in coach, and certainly not on the way back where, you know, likely would be a forced red eye into somewhere in the U.S. and then a daytime flight back coach. That's a lot for me to load into, but I definitely do want to check Hawaii off on my list at some point. You know, and I didn't know that you haven't been yet.
Nope, never been. I've got probably a few more states than you do left to go. But, you know, with all these fares that we report on and talk about all the time to Hawaii, I'm just like, I'm itching to go.
Yeah, no, I am too. And, you know, it's not from lack of wanting to go. It's more just, you know, the number of destinations have popped up that have been priced more accordingly or what have you. Those have all fit the, you know, check the boxes for me, you know, quicker than Hawaii is. It'll certainly be on the list. And you and I both being Disney fans, I certainly want to take a look at Disney's Aulani Resort when I'm there, you know, to check another box. But
well, and speaking of Disney, I see that they've got Orlando to Baltimore, so that's pretty perfect for you.
You know, the only thing I don't know about that one is I'll have to look and see how they connect it, because I think, there may be some Baltimore, Charlotte, Orlando flights that work, but a lot of stuff from Baltimore goes to Miami. So I don't, I mean, that'd be a long way to get there, American. That's one of the tough parts about me is that unless I want to go to DCA, Reagan, living out near Dulles, you know, American has become a tough choice for me to get up and down the Eastern Seaboard or to places in the Midwest, just because I don't have Chicago, out of here and limited connections to Charlotte.
No, I hear you.
So when you aren't on a boat outside of Amsterdam, where can people find you?
Well, my website is coworkaholic.com. I'm on Instagram and Facebook, just coworkaholic. And on Twitter is at the co-workaholic.
Well, cool, Mike. I hope you have a great time on the boat when you set sail today. Glad that you didn't miss out on that.
Oh, I appreciate it.
We'll have you back on the show again soon. But coming up next, we got Jen from Deals We Like to talk about the less yuckiness of the new Marriott promotion, let's call it. It's getting ever so slightly better. And we'll close up the show this week with a little walk down Av Geek Lane. We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. The Miles to Go podcast is brought to you in part by No Jet Lag. Don't let jet lag get you down. Flight crews, sports teams, and business executives around the world sing the praises of No Jet Lag. No Jet Lag is the leader in jet lag management for the last 25 years. Don't let jet lag spoil your next trip. Visit nojetlag.com to get yours today. Welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast with another It's a Big Deal segment. I've got Jen back with me from Deals We Like. How are you today, Jen?
I'm doing well, thanks, Ed. How are you?
I'm good. And we're talking about Marriott's mega bonus promotion. You know, when it first came out, I sort of felt like it was a mega and wasn't real wild about the promotion. I think you felt the same when they first announced it, right?
Right. Nothing so special, but something better than nothing, but still not great.
Yeah, it definitely fits into the, beats a sharp stick in the eye sort of category.
Right.
But Marriott recently announced an enhancement. I still won't call it great, but we want to make sure folks know about it because now there is a reason to bounce around a bit, right?
Right. So with Marriott and Starwood now merging, there's a total of 29 brands you could stay at. And so what Marriott is trying to do with this promotion is get you to try out all of their different types of brands, which is an interesting twist to the promotion. And I can definitely see some people trying to maximize this promotion by staying at all the 29 brands, but the number of points that they're giving out to actually hit that, 29 brand threshold is minimal, that there's not really so much of an incentive, unfortunately. Like, I think it could have been a really fun challenge for some.
Yeah, I agree. And and just to lay it out for folks, you'll get 10,000 bonus points at 10 different brands, 29,000 bonus points at 29 brands. And to put that in perspective, one of my favorite SPG hotels that has now been assimilated are the Swan and Dolphin hotels at Disney World. Not because they're unbelievable properties, but because they allow me to take my kids to Disney World for next to nothing. A free night there should cost you about 50,000 points. So, a 29,000 point bonus doesn't even get you a free night there.
Right. Yeah. So this is definitely one of those promotions that you do not, switch the type of brand or the hotel you're going to stay at and pay more money just to earn those bonus points. It will absolutely not pay out. Now, if it's the same price or you're on, company business and they're paying and you want to go for it, by all means, but definitely not wanting to spend more money on, unlike some other promotions and some situations.
Yeah, I think where this could fit in is, I couldn't believe a couple of markets that I travel to. I don't start with Marriott for my hotel searches. I start with Hyatt, and then I move to SPG. And so on a couple of them recently where I'm traveling to smaller markets, and I went through the SPG site, just the sheer number of Marriott brands in some of these smaller places like, Fort Wayne, Indiana, if you wanted a hotel hop, it really would be possible for roughly the same rate to stay at three or four different brands if you had a three or four night stay.
Right.
I'm not sure I'd want to, but it is possible.
Right.
And, I don't know. I mean, I guess, is this the best that we can hope for with hotel promos right now?
Goodness, I hope not. I guess we'll have to see what comes. I mean, this promotion goes until like the beginning of next year, and I guess we'll see what promotion comes out afterwards. But based on this, this would have been such a good opportunity for them to really highlight their brands and get people excited over SPG and Marriott, especially since they've had so many tech issues and people are definitely not happy right now. This could have been a good opportunity to kind of switch people's mentality. And so I don't foresee them going up from here, but you never know.
Yeah, and to put things in perspective, I hope I get the details on this right, but as we were recording here, I just remembered that Hyatt did something similar when they launched their new program. And at 5 different brands, you got a free night. And I believe it was capped at a category 4. And then once you hit 10 brands, you got a free night at any property in the system, which, you know, for equivalency to Marriott, that would mean a room that could cost you almost 100,000 points a night.
Right.
For staying at 10 different brands. And given, I understand Hyatt doesn't have quite as big a footprint, but to get to 29 brands, good Lord, I mean, that's a lot of travel. So
right.
This definitely feels like a much weaker attempt at getting folks excited.
And the difference is this is just a short time period where Hyatt's, my actual free night from that Hyatt promotion just hit my account last week.
Right.
And that was just in the lifetime of staying at Hyatt. There was no, you know, promotional time frame with that, where this is up until January 31st, Hyatt's was forever, I guess, once you kept on stacking on top of one another, regardless of dates.
Yeah, I almost feel like we should have our own promo on Miles to Go. I'll have to bake that in a bit. But I guess if somebody can prove that they stayed at all 29 brands in the course of the Marriott promotion, that, you know, the first person to do that should win something special from me, because that's just a real pity party right there.
There will be someone, definitely. And that's staying at 10 brands. There'll definitely be some just by default. But the 29 brands, I agree.
All right. Well, Jen, thanks a bunch for hopping on with us. Tell folks where they can find you when you're not on the podcast.
Thanks, Ed, for having me. You can find me at my blog, dealswelike.com. You can also find me at Twitter and Facebook, at dealswelike. And send me a note at any point asking any questions about this promotion or anything else you come across at dealswelike@gmail.com.
Thanks a bunch, Jen. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Hey, well, we're taking a break from the show. I wanted to tell you about a new travel podcast that one of my friends just launched. The We Travel There podcast covers a different destination each week in 30 minutes or less. The host, Lee Huffman, finds experts on each area and does a deep dive into each destination. We Travel There will help you find the best surfing spots on Oahu and the Penguin Parade in Melbourne, Australia. He's already covered a couple of my favorite places to visit, like Hong Kong and Vancouver. Find We Travel There on Apple Podcasts or wherever else you find great podcasts. Now, back to the show. Hello and welcome back to the Miles to Go podcast. We're joining you today from Dallas, Texas, where American Airlines has just completed the renovation of the C.R. Smith Museum. Named for Cyrus Rowlett Smith, he was the CEO of American Airlines for 34 years. The museum provides deep insight into the history and heritage of American Airlines. I was originally here about 5 years ago for a large fundraising event that we did, where we got to do a bunch of fun things like jump out of airplanes onto evacuation slides and go swimming in a pool for a water evac. And I'm back here today to tour through the museum. You'll find more than just pieces of memorabilia here from American Airlines over the years, though you'll find plenty of that. Walking through the doors of the C.R. Smith Museum, you'll also find everything from pretty much a fully functional MD-80 cockpit to a fully restored DC-3 airplane. And I'm here today with Uli Das, who's the executive director of the C.R. Smith Museum. And she was nice enough to walk me through all of the new exhibits today. We visited with each of them, and I may or may not have jumped out of the plane onto the evacuation slide. After what I imagine had to be a bit of a challenge for the museum team, how does it feel to have the renovation completed?
Well, thank you, Ed. It feels wonderful to be at this point and to have reopened the museum and now to be able to welcome visitors into it and to see them react and interact with our exhibits. We spent the last 15-ish months working really hard on this very comprehensive redesign and renovation. We had over 300 team members participate in the process, so it was quite involved. And we're over the moon now that we're done and the exhibits are finished.
So the heart of the C.R. Smith Museum was something that was envisioned by airline employees, both current and former. It must feel awesome to have that many current and former American Airlines employees involved in the vision for the museum.
Absolutely, yes. So one of our objectives with this renovation was to showcase the operation of the airline and to showcase the people that run the airline. So to give a platform to American Airlines team members and allow them to explain their roles and what they do and how all of it comes together to allow our airplanes to take off and land and do it all safely and on time.
Yeah, we were upstairs and we were in the airline control center where I remember being a number of years ago in the real thing. And I think you guys did a great job of bringing it to a level where a group of kids or even adults could sit in that facility and get a sense of what it takes to run an airline for a couple hours.
Yeah, that's what we're hoping. So one of my favorite exhibits upstairs is the Airline Command Center. And it's really, for those people who have been to NASA's Mission Control, that's kind of what it is. It's really where the airline runs all of the flights and you know, from before takeoff until afterwards, and where all the different parties that have an impact on that sit together. And we aim to gamify that here so that anyone, ordinary visitors, can come in and can make some of the really tough decisions that the folks in the Integrated Operations Center at American Airlines have to do every day. So when weather strikes, the visitors that come in here can make decisions about whether to cancel a flight or delay or things like that.
Yeah, and as much as the IOC was a real interesting walkthrough for me, folks that have listened to the podcast for a number of years will know that I've been an American Airlines flyer for a long time. And I was certainly it was certainly heartwarming for me to turn the corner and see the cockpit of an MD-80. I know some folks have a love-hate relationship with the plane. It's flown me to so many places and gotten me to home to my family so many times. It must have taken just an immense amount of time to essentially create an active cockpit for people to sit in.
Yeah, it was a labor of love, and it took a lot of people and their expertise to make this possible. And again, we relied on a lot of team members of American Airlines who helped us, you know, just physically cut the cockpit off an MD-80, who helped us figure out all the necessary paperwork, who shipped it, who got it here. Then we also relied on our designers. It was Jack Rouse Associates and Roto to help create this experience that we now have. And really what we did here was we left the cockpit as intact as we could. We made as minimal changes as we possibly could, because we really wanted people to go in there and sit in it and have, you know, as authentic an experience as we could. So we made very few changes, and created an audio track so that when you're sitting in there, you can push a button and you can hear a real pilot, Kent Ween, American Airlines pilot, explain to you all the different features of the cockpit and how a pilot actually flies it. And people are very excited about it. They love it. And I will say it's accessible and interesting, I would say, from anyone age 2 or 3 up to, 100.
Yeah. Aviation geeks of all ages, I can tell you certainly it was a fun little bit of history for me to sit down and walk through the cockpit a bit. When you and I were walking through the museum, we were talking a bit about schools, and I loved hearing about the approach that you're taking with getting local schools involved in the museum exhibits.
Yeah, so having an impact in the community and being a partner with educators and with schools and principals in the area is a really important objective for the museum. And in an average year, we impact 15,000 or more students and children in the area. We go to them in outreach programs, and we also bring them here for workshops and field trips and more. And so to find a way to create a learning experience here at the museum that ties in really well with the classroom and with local education standards or state education standards for teachers in this area is something we put a lot of importance on. And we also have brought in a lot of children from Title I schools. And then again, it's a really important objective because there are a lot of kids in the area that could have a really great and stable career that takes them to whole new places and gives them a whole lot of personal and professional growth opportunities. But a lot of these kids are not even aware that those opportunities exist. And
sure.
So we see ourselves in a role or having an obligation to go out and touch as many of those kids and bring them in here and give them the opportunity to see new career choices and new opportunities that they wouldn't otherwise be aware of.
Yeah, those who are regular listeners of the podcast or follow me on my blog know that I have two kids at home that have an affinity for the airline industry, and I know that they're going to love coming to get to play with some of the stuff that you guys have in the museum, which leads me to my final question, and I'm not sure if you'll be willing to admit it or not, but have you taken the plunge? Have you gone down the evacuation slide yet?
Yes, more than once. And I will admit, I've tried it, you know, feet first, head first, and whatnot. After all, I have to check and make sure it's a good experience.
Quality control.
Exactly.
Well, if folks are coming down here for the first time and they've never been to C.R. Smith, tell them how they find the museum. I know we're in the shadow of DFW Airport, but what's the best way for them to get here?
Best way is either to drive here in their personal vehicle, or Uber also brings them here. We, as you said, are just a short shot, I would say 5-6 minutes from DFW Airport, and close to American Airlines headquarters as well.
Great. Well, thanks for taking a few minutes to be on the podcast with us, folks. If you haven't been down to the C.R. Smith Museum in Dallas-Fort Worth, it's definitely time to come back. Thanks for being on with us.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back to wrap up this week's show on the Miles to Go podcast, and we've got a reader question from Allison. She's been a loyal listener of the show, and her family are putting together a trip to Europe next year. And essentially, the the question that she posed to me was, if you're not a business traveler, where is the tipping point between committing to one transferable currency like Ultimate Rewards points or American Express membership rewards, and diversifying between programs? Her specific example is that her family of four is saving up for a trip to Europe next year. And they're all in on Ultimate Rewards points, trying to stock up for that big trip. And I couldn't agree more with that strategy. Boy, I mean, diversification is very important in this game. But she's already diversified a little bit, I guess even more than a little bit, when you consider how many transfer partners that Chase Ultimate Rewards has, on top of being able to transfer to domestic airlines like United and Southwest. You've also got airlines overseas like British Airways, and you've got bunches of hotel partners. Marriott, which obviously gives you all the Starwood properties now, Hyatt, IHG. So lots of different places that those points can go. So in a way, she's already diversified. Now, if there was a big change to the Chase program, sure, that could damage her. But I don't foresee that in the next year, especially if she's already starting to talk about how to plan that trip. That being said, the advice that I gave Allison, and I'll share here with you guys on the show, is that I do think that dabbling a little bit in the American Express world isn't the worst thing in the world. It's advice that I'm trying to give myself. About a month and a half ago, I had Tiffany on from One Mile at a Time, and she dissected my wallet and pointed out that I still had a glaring hole in my wallet without membership rewards because of the flexibility I was losing with Starwood being absorbed by Marriott, where Starwood used to be a really great flexible currency to transfer to a bunch of airlines. So my recommendation to Allison was to jump on the current 50,000 point sign-up bonus for the American Express gold card, that pretty rose gold card that you can get through January, and getting those 50,000 points by using a referral link from a friend as opposed to the publicly available offer for 25,000. Again, guys, apologize for my voice when it pops in and out on us. But the thing there was, get the card for the sign-up bonus for now. Use it for the things that card is really geared for, like the bonus points for supermarket spend, which I think is great. But then they should be leaning in on the rest of their spend on Ultimate Rewards points for this trip for the family of four to Europe next year, unless they see a specific opportunity. So, for example, they get those 50,000 points and they find some sort of very specific transfer partner, whether it's moving one of the family members on using the American Express transfer partners to get an airline ticket that way, or if there's a specific hotel where the redemption level is close to where they are with that 50,000 point sign up bonus to transfer somewhere else. That being said, that's a long shot, given that they should be planning that trip for next year now. if we assume it's a summer trip, now's a really good time to be looking for award inventory. If it's spring break, you're actually probably even a little bit behind the curve. So planning time is key here. And if they were to apply for the American Express card today, get it tomorrow and sign up bonus comes, call it 45 days from now, by the time they get those points in their account, it's January. And I'd certainly like her to be further along on the planning for that trip by January than just deciding what sort of hotel she should be looking for. At any rate, I really appreciate Allison sending those questions in. She had a couple of others that we're going to bring up in a future episode, including bringing my friend Mommy Points back on the show to discuss a recent hotel that she stayed at, that we've both stayed at down in Florida. But please keep those questions coming. I love answering that stuff on the air. I love helping folks travel better. That's the whole point of the podcast. That's a full wrap on this week's episode. If you have any questions I can help answer, send them in so we can answer them in a future episode. You can email us at miles2gopodcast@gmail.com, or you can hit us up on Twitter at miles2gopodcast. If you're enjoying the show, there are two things you could do to help us out. Subscribe to the podcast. That way you get our episodes for free as soon as they're published. And leave us a comment and a rating. By subscribing and rating the podcast, you're helping us grow the show for more listeners. Thanks again for listening. A big thanks to Mike, Jen, Yuli for helping me put together a great show this week. We're already putting together a great show for next week. But until then, we've got miles to go.